Hi, this is Jenny Chamberlain, and welcome to my Southern Utah Housing Podcast. This season, we're talking about attainable housing.
Today, I'm really excited to have one of my longtime real estate friends, Michelle Cloud, with me. I was interested in interviewing her because she serves on the Planning Commission in Hurricane City. And so she's kind of on the front lines of a lot of policy decisions that get made. So Michelle, can you start out by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about maybe what interested you to serve on the Planning Commission, and also tell us professionally a little bit about yourself?
Okay, well, thanks for inviting me. I am excited to be here. I have been in real estate since 2015. We moved down here in 2013. And before I was in real estate, I managed a team of software testers for JPMorgan Chase and their commercial card programs. And so I was really good at managing lots of moving pieces, problems that pop up, people, that sort of thing. So after doing that for a while, and they decided that all the jobs in commercial card needed to go to Chicago. And I thought, well, there's not enough money in the world for me to live in Chicago. I love visiting Chicago. It's an amazing city, but I would not want to live there. So I took the severance and the time and thought, what in the world would I want to do? Now I have a blank slate. I can start something. And I've always been interested in real estate. And I had, when we sold our house in Sandy to move down here, we had the worst real estate agent. Oh, no. And then we fired him and we got the best real estate agent. And she was amazing. And I thought, if I could do for other people what Kathy did for us, that would be pretty satisfying. So I thought, okay, I'll go to real estate school. So I did, found ERA, and was so blessed to be there. It's an amazing brokerage, and Thane especially, we sure miss him. But that's kind of why I'm in real estate and why I love it, is because I'm able to help people make their biggest decisions and some of their dreams come true. Back in, I think it was 2017, I saw a tweet from Hurricane City that said, we're looking for planning commissioners if you're interested, apply. And I had been looking for a way to get involved in the community. And I thought, well, this seems interesting. So I kind of looked into it a little bit. And I thought, also, it would help my knowledge of the area so I could help my clients better.
Yeah.
So I applied. And it took a long time. And one day I got a call from Mayor Bramall.
I know him.
You know him. And he said, you want to come in for an interview? And so I met with him. And just kind of a little side thing that nobody knows, I had been coaching Girls on the Run.
Oh, yeah.
And I had my workout pants on inside out.
Oh. So, when you went in for your interview?
Yeah.
Did you know it at the time or did you realize it afterwards?
I realized it after that. Oh. I had met with the mayor with my pants on inside out. So, yeah, that was fun.
Well, my dad's pretty down to earth, so I'm sure he didn't notice one
bit. They were black legging, so it wasn't that noticeable.
Oh, that's really...
It was fine, but it's like, oh, great, this is how you roll. You wear your clothes inside out in important meetings.
Everything is just fine.
So we had a great meeting, and then he put my name in front of the city council for them to vote, and they voted. And so I've been doing it... I just started my second four-year term.
Oh, wow. So planning commission is usually a four-year term?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, and then they put it up again for another vote if you're interested in staying.
Okay, cool. So. Wow, so that's a good long amount of time you've been serving.
It's been really satisfying, and one thing I like being part of, number one, knowing what's happening in the community.
Mm-hmm.
That's really helpful. But being a part of making those decisions and recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I didn't realize, that we would have an integral part of helping create some of the ordinances.
Mm-hmm.
So the staff will come up with, say the mayor says we need an ordinance about XYZ, and the staff will research it and come up with ordinances. And we have work meetings, and they bring it to us, and we get to tweak it and fix it and have public hearings and tweak it and fix it again, and then we vote on it and recommend to go to the city council, and then they vote on it or send it back. And then that can become one of our ordinances in the city.
That's cool. So you guys can be like a guiding hand on shaping.
Hopefully, yes.
Policy. Cool. So what's the worst thing that's ever happened to you on planning commission?
The time we
or
got
the best.
The time we got called incestuous.
Oh, goody. Was that an angry citizen?
It was an angry citizen. Definitely I would put it in the category of public clamor.
So did that make it easier to dismiss if it's like that wild?
Well, no, because you have to take the public clamor with a grain of salt, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's important that citizens come to us during the public hearings and share their thoughts and feelings, and we mm-hmm. want to hear those, definitely. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it gets out of hand, and people are mad, and they let their emotions get the best of them, and they accuse us of being incestuous with the developers.
Oh, that's funny.
You know, when we're really just trying to make the best decisions with the information that we have.
Yeah. Mm. Well, and I think sometimes they think, like, you get to decide it however you want, but really isn't your job just to apply what the existing code is?
Exactly.
And you're kind of governed by that. And there's a little bit of room for interpretation, but mostly you're just doing what the plan says.
Exactly. Right? And in a recent meeting, we've had to say, we see what you're asking us to do, but mm-hmm. we can't break the law. And yeah. this is what our ordinance says.
Yeah, that makes sense. So recently you sent me an article because you know I care about attainable housing. So let's talk a little bit about this article. It was in the Salt Lake Tribune. Mm-hmm. It's called
NIMBY Attitudes Hold in Washington County.
So this is an article from the Trib about how affordable housing, it's like we're in a pretty heavy crunch here. But in our public hearings, what's the tone that we're hearing?
It's NIMBY, and for people who don't know what that is not mm-hmm. in my backyard, and that seems to be the prevailing attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw that article, I'm like, yep, that's true. And they even quote a lady in here that, you know, she says, I know that we have a problem with affordable housing, but I just don't want that anywhere near my home. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see that kind of housing.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me sad.
And that was in the Ivins hearing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that you hear similar themes from yeah. that in public hearings?
We do. That and people don't want our history of agriculture to go away.
Yeah. Especially for Hurricane, I mm-hmm. think that's crucial. Yeah, interesting. So what are some of the interesting things in this article? What caught your interest in?
Well, I mean, mostly, you know, seeing that people are validating what I was feeling that I was hearing in Hurricane, that not mm-hmm. in my backyard, not in my backyard. But mm-hmm. there's some good information in here about, you know, some of the things that Shirlene Quayle, so she's worked really hard on affordable housing in the
yes,
area.
Yes, she has. She's amazing.
Some of the things that she said and different solutions that people are proposing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just for an interest for the listeners. One of the quotes from this article talked about how the median family income for a family of four in Washington County in 2022 was $83,900. And so whoever was quoting this said it would qualify for a $390,000 loan. And I mean, those numbers can go up and down based on APRs and all that sort of thing. But the University of Utah found that the average price of a home in the county for the third quarter last year was $537,000. So we can see there's just a huge gap there.
Giant.
Yeah, and Shirlene Quayle noted in the meeting, there were 1,200 homes on the market in the county at the time she looked, but only 77 of them were available to people making around $84,000 a year. So it's kind of bleak statistics.
Yeah, it is sad. And, you know, every conference that I've been to lately, seems like springtime brings, you know, January, February, March bring a lot of conferences and things for real estate and planning also as well. You mm-hmm. know, and all the meetings, everybody was talking about attainable housing. How are we going to solve this problem? And it's a big question that's out there, and mm-hmm. I don't see a lot of answers.
I don't either. And a funny thing I wanted to point out is that you and I are doing this interview in a model home. And mm-hmm. the price of this model home that we're sitting in is around $1.2 million. It's $1.175. And it does have a pool and a view. But this is something that came up in a conference I went to recently, the Economic Summit in St. George. They talked about how Washington County in particular has become a little bit of a luxury market. And I think that's putting pressure on our builders because they want to go after those higher dollar sales inventory, right. You know, so when we look at, you know, slices of affordability of what homes are available up over 900,000, we have a lot of homes available. Mm-hmm. You know, you can, if you have $900,000 to spend on a house, you can go and look and look and look and have plenty of options. You can have a view with a pool. You can have a half an acre with a RV garage and all your toys. And, but if you just need a place to live because you want to work here, it's a lot bigger challenge. So
it is. And at that other conference we were at, I don't remember what the name of it was. It had the panel of the county sheriff was there and people from
that was the Housing Action Coalition one last fall.
And they all talked about how we're trying to bring employees here and they can't, they accept our job, but they decline because they don't have housing.
Yeah, I've heard that. To live. That's the case with the hospital, the sheriff, the university. I've heard that a couple times. Mm-hmm.
My son-in-law works for Zion Forever Foundation, and they've run into that issue.
Have they? Yeah. And one point that was brought up in the meeting in Ivins, I think it was Shirlene Quayle, said that their veterans home, it's one of the highest rated veterans homes in the country, and they can't hire enough nurses, caretakers, and janitors and administrative staff to support the veterans who live there. I mean, there's other factors in this, but affordable housing is a big one. It's a big one.
It really is. And in the economic summit, Governor Cox mentioned that our way out of this mess is to build our way out.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that makes a lot of people mad, but I think he might be onto something.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a supply and demand situation.
Well, and it's also changing the paradigm of what you think attainable housing is, you know, or like entry-level housing, first-time home buyers. People have this vision in their mind of, you know, I got married, I had my first baby, now I'm going to go buy a house. Mm-hmm. And they're thinking of a single-family home with a little bit of a yard, and that's not what the reality is now. It's multifamily housing is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and twin homes and, things that look a little different from what we're used to seeing here because we're used to having plenty of space. So, yeah. So Neil Walter was also at that meeting, and he brought up a couple things that the legislators are trying to do. He said they've approved more than $200 million to help with housing. Part of it is a $50 million earmark that's set aside for new home buyers so they can get like a $20,000 little loan to help with their down payment. And those are for new homes that can't exceed $450,000. But I would assume those could be twin homes, townhomes as well, just like you were saying, maybe not looking at what we're thinking of as traditional starter homes, but shifting our vision for sure.
Yeah, and that's going to help. And I think what it's going to take is a multifaceted approach. We're currently in the Planning Commission looking at the inclusionary zoning. So basically what we're doing is making some carrots rather than sticks, because we can't do the sticks. That's against state law. For developers, enticing developers to build attainable housing. So different things like reduced fees and tax credits maybe, and fast-tracking their applications, that sort of thing, because we know that the faster you move the application through, the less money they're paid if they have a mortgage on
interest,
the land. On the interest, that sort of thing. So, and we did have some planning commissioners that are like, well, no, why is the government stepping in? Why are we helping these developers? Why should we help them? It should be market. You know, let the market help. I thought, well, the market got us here in the first place. And it's going to take more. We're not forcing them. We're giving them an option. You know, let's put these out here and see if the developers use them or not.
Yeah. Well, and this is what's interesting to me, because I hear that. I hear people say, well, the market. But there is a huge unmet demand for affordable housing that sometimes planning and cities being part of that big picture are preventing developers from being able to meet market demand.
Right.
You know, I've gone through multiple times as a realtor where I've had many, many buyers under a certain price point and there is no inventory available for them on the market. And that is, you know, and there's many reasons why that's the case, but a large part of it is the city won't allow anyone or hasn't incentivized or at least gotten out of the way for people to meet what the market demand is.
Yep. So. Yep, exactly. So, you know, I'm wondering what else it's gonna take if we're looking at it multifaceted. So we've got cities doing inclusionary zoning. We've got
Can you say a little more about inclusionary zoning? Like, what is that?
Yeah, so basically a developer comes to us and says, I want to build this development. Mm-hmm. And we say, you get a 3% density bonus if X number of those houses are attainable.
That sounds really smart for an attainable housing plan for the city.
Mm-hmm. So we're working on it now, and there mm-hmm. will be a... I've lost my train of thought.
A public hearing?
Hearing, yes. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, there will be a public hearing in the next one or two meetings. So I think we're about ready for it. So
are citizens of other towns allowed to come?
Absolutely come. It impacts our whole area, especially as small and close-knit as Hurricane, Laverkin, Tocqueville. We're all just, everybody thinks of this area.
It's like it's the Hurricane Valley. Yeah. Even the MLS acknowledges us as friends.
So, but it's always interesting to hear what people have to say. But I think it's going to take that. I think it's going to take stuff from the financing side, like mm-hmm. the stuff the legislature passed, the Olene Walker grant that's been around for a while. I had some mm-hmm. clients that had used that to purchase their home, and they had completely forgot that they got it when they purchased the home. Mm-hmm. But then it was a little similar to what the legislature passed this session. Mm-hmm. They got a little loan to help them get in the house, and then when you sell the house, you pay it back.
So do they, that's not a situation where they own the house for a long time and eventually they don't have to pay it back if they live there long enough? Like a little, mm-hmm. a lien. Okay.
Yeah. So, and then we've also got, from a real estate perspective, we've got the money that goes to UAR HOF that mm-hmm. hopefully is helping with attainable housing. That's its purpose. Mm-hmm. So for people that don't know how that works is earnest money that you pay when you're purchasing a house gets put into an interest-bearing account, and then every now and then they come in and scrape off that interest and donate it to the UAR HOF Fund, which is supposed to help with attainable housing.
That's cool.
So then I wondered, is there more we could do? Mm-hmm. So maybe it's something, I don't know, I'm just thinking about these things, but maybe it's something that we as agents agree to forego our commission on attainable housing X number mm-hmm. of deals a year or something like that. I mean, I'm just bouncing ideas around in my brain, but there's got to be more that we can do to help our neighbors, to help mm-hmm. our firefighters, our police officers, our teachers, our nurses.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know there's some lending stuff. Like I have a friend who's an educator up in Northern Utah, and he said, I never thought I'd be able to get a house, but just recently there was something that allowed a grant for educators. I think they got an extra $30,000, and that made the difference for them to be able to get in. So I was really happy for him. That was only in a certain county or something, though. Yeah. I don't think that was statewide. But I was like, I'm glad to hear of other communities working on this.
Yep.
And that NIMBY article from the Trib also mentioned another legislative solution is that they're working on. So I read about these when I was studying best practices, but a low-income housing tax credit to help developers have financial incentives to build low-income housing. So it's an LIHTC. So they put a bunch of money in for that too. So I was happy to hear that. And maybe that would be something. Sounds like Hurricane City's working to work with that sort of thing too. And then I also loved in that article, there was a guy from Santa Clara, an architect, who mentioned approving smaller projects that blend in better with existing neighborhoods. Instead of all these projects with 100 units, like I'm seeing in Hurricane, a lot of townhomes going in, and I'm happy to see them because they are more affordable. But I keep thinking, like, how cool would it be if we had a single-family neighborhood that had about a third of it as attainable? Like, say it was just duplexes that looked like large single-family homes. Mm-hmm. There's a new subdivision in my neighborhood that they require the homes to be 2,500 square feet. Minimum. And so every home in there is going to be over 750, which is even above the average. It's above average, it's above median, it's above everything. But I just think, like, if they made that, that's one side's pretty nice and then the other side's like a very generous casita, that would be like, a multi-generational family could live in there. Somebody who couldn't afford it without the income could afford it by renting the one side, but it would still have, like, that lady, I mean, we can say, oh, we're going to divide lines and it's us against them. Or we can listen to the people who say, I don't want to look at this and say, if you don't want to look at that, how can we make the affordable housing look like something you want to look at?
And there's a lot of really smart young architects coming up that can figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
Some of the things I see. And even like the tiny houses. Mm-hmm. I think there's places for tiny houses. It also mentioned the printed, what are they?
3D printing.
3D printing houses.
Reducing the cost of building. Yeah. That's a cool idea.
That kind of blew my mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I was watching a video of it, and like it had some cement coming out of a giant 3D printer. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. I think the difficulty there is that you run into, like, when you think about building a house, there are 100 moving parts. You know, I see so many people unhappy with their builders, and I'm like, you know, that builder is coordinating 50 people or 100 people putting this together. And all of them, if we start doing a total new way of building houses, they all have to relearn everything.
That's true.
So that, I think that's a real big barrier that I don't know how to, oftentimes we come back to, oh, education is the solution. But some people are old and tired and they don't want to learn new things.
Right.
So gotta, I guess, fan the flame of enthusiasm for education. So another thing I wanted to talk about, do you have anything else you want to talk about from that article?
No, I think
on Planning Commission. Yeah. Okay. Another thing that Michelle and I were looking at as we were preparing for this was there's a policy brief that was recently out. And if you're not familiar with the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute, they're out of the University of Utah, and they have a section that's on construction and new building and real estate. And they recently, in February, put out a policy brief that talked about housing prices and affordability. And it's, so far, it's the only thing that's come out from them this year, but it's a very good report, and I highly recommend you read it. But I just wanted to share one quote from it, because it has a whole section. Well, you know, the first thing talks about a sharp increase in interest rates. It talks about housing price increases are slowing in 2022. But year over year, we're still above last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this says, high mortgage payment hinders home ownership. So I just want to read this quote. So it says, comparing the mortgage payment required to purchase the median priced home in October 2021 to October 2022 best illustrates this challenge. Over 12 months, the median sales price of a single family home in the four Wasatch Front counties rose from $522,000 to $550,000. During the same period, the 30-year mortgage interest rate increased from 3.07% to 6.9%. Driven primarily by higher interest rates, the monthly mortgage payment increased from $2,921 to $4,276, a 46% increase in a single year. Given these assumptions, the 46% increase would apply to homes at all price levels, above or below the median price. Using the standard rule that a mortgage payment should not exceed 28% of gross income, the income required to finance the median price home jumps from $125,185 in 2021 to $183,257 in 2022. So that is an extra like $58,000 that buyers to afford a median home just have to find somewhere.
Under the bed.
I mean, it's I feel like it's bleak. It's just really hard. But I feel like that was very illustrative of the problem that we're facing. My sister's a lender, and she said, she was telling me the last loan she closed in, I think 2021, was under 3%. And the last one she closed in 2022 was, I think it was 6.5%.
More than double.
Yeah. It's a 5% increase in a year. It's just pretty wild. So, did you have any thoughts on the affordability thing? I feel like we need to look for some good news.
I know. Well, not really any thoughts other than, I mean, that Kempsey Gardner is a jewel to have, and they have such good information. So I'm really feel happy that we have that we can lean on, and it does seem bleak, but I think we've got a lot of good people working on it. Mm-hmm. I think people are trying to look at it from different perspectives. If we could try and keep an open mind. One of the things that just I was thinking that didn't really apply or pertain to that article, but a lot of people think that having multifamily housing next to your housing reduces your value of your home. Mm-hmm. And there have been several studies that have shown that it really doesn't. So that's probably one of the biggest things people say. If you build multifamily next to my house, my values are going to tank, but they don't. Mm-hmm. They don't. I mean, look at it from a real estate perspective. When you're doing a market analysis for a home, you're not going to compare that home to its neighbor that's not like it. You're going to compare like for like.
That's right.
So you're looking for a single family, 1,800 square foot, three bedroom, two bath home within a mile to compare that to, not its next door neighbor. It happens to be a multifamily.
Right. And an apartment has nothing, like, that's totally non-comparable.
Yeah.
So if you're pulling values, we don't even look at that. That's a good point. But I've read that. It was Kempsey Gardner that has one of, they're one of the ones that did that study. And I think it makes sense, you know. You want to live by people that you like, and some of them might live in an apartment. And it just draws more people into the area.
Yeah.
I remember my dad saying that, like, it's kind of an economic principle, because when Walmart wanted to come to Hurricane, Ace Hardware, the guy was not happy. You know, he's like, I can't believe you're going to let them come in here. We already, you know, this is really going to hurt our business. And he said, this is my dad. I'm quoting my dad, so don't hold me accountable for this. But he said that when the Walmart did come, tons of people would come to the Walmart to, and then they would go finish their shopping at Ace Hardware, and their business actually did even better. So,
yeah.
And I think it's a lot the same with, you get a lot of dense housing, you know, it brings the community to the area that more people want to live there, and it doesn't hurt the values as much as people might worry it would.
Right. So imagine a community that's got all different types of housing. One of the things that our new, our old planning commissioner was amazing. I mean, her brain was, she was so great. So when we lost her, our planning director, when we lost her, I thought, what in the world are we going to do? And then they brought in Stephen, and he's been amazing. He's so smart. He's got such great information. He works so, so hard for our city. And, you know, he has helped me understand the importance of having a community with lots of different types of housing. So you've got all different kinds of people living in all different types of housing. You've got services right there. It's walkable. It's got paths. That's the vision I have in my mind, is that we have these housing centers that maybe start out dense in the middle and then get less dense as they go out. I think they tried to do that with the Elam Valley. You know, it sat there vacant for so, so long. And with the had the golf course in the middle planned and all that sort of thing. And so they came back and decided to redo that. And we had many, 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 many meetings going over it and going over it. And I think that's a good example of the city and the developer working well together to get what everybody wanted. So there's lots of different types of housing that'll be in there. There's it's fun to watch it happen. I drive past it several times a day. And so eventually I think we're going to have some services out there, which I live in Dixie Springs. We have nothing. So eventually we'll have services.
Yeah. You have to drive into town for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to have, we don't even have a pizza place that will deliver to Dixie Springs.
Tokerville is the same. Really? And it's a great flaw of Hurricane that only the Hurricaneites that are in town get their pizza.
That's right. That's right. But I hear there's a pizza place coming by Walmart, and they said,
They will deliver to
Dixie Springs.
That's
so
exciting.
But I just have a vision in my mind of a community where there's lots of different kinds of people, lots of different kinds of housing.
Yeah, I love that vision. Do you have anything else you want to say? Are you good finishing with your awesome vision?
Yeah, let's just finish with my vision then.
Okay.
So I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for coming, Michelle.
Thank you for listening to the Southern Utah Real Estate Podcast with Jenny Chamberlain. I hope you'll think about subscribing and give the podcast a review if you found it valuable. If you have feedback or ideas to make this podcast better, check out my website, jennychamberlain.com, and leave me a message there.